Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Randstad Q4 and full year 2010 results presentation. We have the usual format. Ben will take us through the performance, including the countries. Robert Jan will take us through the financials, and after that, we'll have an extensive Q&A session where we take questions from the room first, and then we'll switch to the telephone lines. With that, I'll give the floor to Ben.
Good afternoon, or for the ones on the phone, someone else in the world, good morning. Robert Jan and I calculated this is the 34th time we're presenting the quarterly results, so we promise if we're still here at the 50th, we wear a golden suit. We have one because we celebrated our 50th anniversary last year. We had 26 parties, and somebody convinced me to wear a golden suit. It's really bad. You don't want me to wear a golden suit, I can tell you. 2010 was a remarkable year for a few reasons, of course. Hello, Arun. Again, 50 year, but the more interesting, back to growth with a steep development through the year, as you will have seen, with all the normal recovery patterns which we've seen in the past, with some exceptional items which we'll try and address in the presentation. Back to profit, good profit, and also very relevant in my view is the fact that we can pay dividend again, at least under the provision that our shareholders agree on us paying dividends. But I'd be very surprised if they would not agree to that. Another thing is going to happen after 50 years. This month, April, not unexpectedly, of course, because this was already known something like 11 years ago, Frits Goldschmeding is going to step down from the supervisory board because it is the end of his third term, and in our rules and regulations, that's the maximum amount of time somebody can serve on the board. We have made an agreement with the family, as you might know, but we've had some questions, so just to be sure, it's described in our annual report every year where we, in exchange for the fact that if something with Frits would happen, which we hope will still take 25 years, the family will not sell any shares within one year, and indeed, if they after that have the plan to sell, the board at that point in time will have 6 months to come up with another suggestion. Would they not agree with the step that is being considered? In return for that, the family will have a permanent position in the supervisory board, so that's why Frits steps down, and Jaap Winter will be his successor as representative of the family. So for some, it was a surprise, but again, this has been in the books as from 2007 already. And again, Frits is 76 and after 12 years in the board. But still, it is a special occasion, of course. He will still be close to the company because he still owns some shares, as you know, and that will not change. He'd rather own more than less. When we suggested the dividend, he said, "Are you sure you want to pay that much?" That's the sort of shareholder he is. But anyhow, we said we were sure. If you look at markets, the trends, these are the familiar pictures, only the curves add one point every time. It's clear that the market development and trends have continued as we expected also in Q3, of course. On the top right-hand side, you see the market, and the one at the bottom is the Randstad performance in those respective markets. Again, 22% growth. That's, of course, including Fujistaff and currencies and what have you, 17% growth organic, which is a very nice number to have, very consistent. We also shared with you the exit rates of January, of course, 14%. Whereas I want to make the comment there that January is a difficult month to read a trend from because we've had some extreme bad weather conditions. We don't know the impact, but for sure in some markets it did have. But more importantly, we see that after the holidays, companies start up a few days later, a few days earlier. That has quite an impact on one month only. So that's why the 14% is an indication, but I wouldn't put too much value to it. We always feel that the month of March is a real indicator of the trend, and February is already more reliable than January will prove to be. But anyhow, we share this information with you nowadays, so no reason to change that. I'll get back to the major markets, so I won't get into too much detail now because, as Bart promised you, an extensive Q&A session. I don't want to take too much time here. Thank you, Bart. So revenue up 17% organically to 3.9 billion. which again is an excellent development. We saw the same picture more or less as we saw last quarter. Last quarter, Q3, we had 55% growth in-house. This time it's 51%, still very, very high. That's including transfers, by the way, but still it also means that our clients have become a lot more active. And we reopened quite a few that we closed because of lack of activity. We gained new clients and we transferred clients, especially in France, as we promised we would do already at the day of the merger. Staffing, 13%, unchanged, although you see the mix changing a bit, and the professionals business is increasing. I'll give you some insights on some markets, comparing Q1 this year to Q4, to give you a feel of what's happening there. Gross margin, relatively flat. Biggest impact is because of mix. And as you guys know, I have to explain to the press, gross margin is no indication of profit, because you also always have to look at the underlying concept with which we supply the market, because different concepts have different costs. Operating expenses up somewhat. We also shared with you that we expect Q1 to be at the highest point, at the same level as Q4. Robert-Jan will get into those things a bit more detailed. Obviously, we consolidated Fuji staff as from the 20th of October. That means we added 15 million costs in Q4 from the Fuji staff operations. It's important to take those into account, of course, for the rest of this year, but that's obvious. And an EBITDA of 161 million versus 106 million. Nice number. We're happy with the 4.2% EBITDA, but we're not very happy yet because, as you know, we're still striving for 5% and we need to get there. Fuji staff added 5.4%. I'm not going to go back to Fuji staff. We had a nice growth of 4% in a difficult market in Japan last quarter still. So they did it very well in spite of a profit warning they gave earlier this year. But they did well, growth and profit. So they delivered on what we expected them to deliver, actually even a bit better. For the full year, starting from a -1 in Q1 to +17 in Q4 organic. Again, excellent in our view. Gained market share in most markets. I'll get back to that too. France, we closed. I'll get back to France and Holland. I know you're not interested in the Netherlands, but I'll do it anyhow. EBITDA up 61% for the year. Fuji staff done, and the leverage ratio at a very healthy 1.5 again, which means we'll pay dividend. Strategically, we were very proud in 2008, let's say 2007, 2008, that we had a better spread of profit across different markets, because before that the Netherlands were far too dominant in our view. It's a disadvantage and an advantage. The advantage is, of course, that in a very difficult year like 2009, they again turned out to be a very reliable profit maker. That helped a lot. But if you look at a strategic spread, 55% of the Netherlands from this small country is too much for the company. And we're happy that we are now in a more healthy distribution again. And we actually expect the distribution to get healthier in this year, because there are quite a few markets that can contribute more in the future. But we think this is an important development. Let's get back to some markets. Let's first share some facts with you here. Because if you look what's happening, let's start with the profit. We have taken some extra cost in Q4 to do some additional reorganizations. I'm not going to get into details for obvious reasons. Would we not have done this, and in January, then the profit actually would have been at 7.2-7.3%. So profitability in Holland is not under threat. Actually, it's doing very well, comparing to where we are now. Looking at market, we are below market indeed. We always flattered ourselves with the idea that we had a very healthy spread. Bigger part in government-related, public spending-related activities, which usually is a safe haven, if you want. I remember when the crisis started, everybody tried to move into that area. Well, we were there already, and that was very good because it helped us. Of course, now it affects our business more. If you look at the gap with the market, let's get into some specifics there too. Tempo-Team, for example. Tempo-Team has a very healthy professionals business. It was about 9% of the total revenue of Tempo Team. We lost half of that business because it was all government related. That segment alone had a 4% impact on the relative performance versus market. So that really is big. So we are worried and we want to do better, but we're less worried than you might think, because those markets are going to come back, and at the same time we will develop the markets where we are too weak and we have not performed good enough. Because for sure, first reason for underperformance is the mirror, it's us. We should have developed other segments earlier, that's clear. But on top of that, I think it's important to really understand what's behind it, because we get many questions about it, and as you know, our vision and mission is to be as transparent as we can to you. Randstad is moving closer to the market again. I explained a big part of the gap between Tempo Team and the market. Yacht, of course, being late cyclical, although it is improving quite a lot. In Q1, Yacht was at minus 29%, to give you an idea, compared to the year before. In Q4, Yacht is at minus 9%, and if you look at December, it's getting very close to zero. So it is improving fast, not fast enough in our taste, but anyhow, it is a big improvement. So we are pretty optimistic about the fact that the Dutch market is going to develop in the right way and that we will also regain market share. One additional reason for the market share story is that we deliberately did not enter into a few contracts where we were convinced we would not be able to make money. Some competitors thought they could make money on the contracts. I'd be very surprised, but we'll see. Next market, France. We promised you in the end of 2009 that we expressed our expectation that we would be back at market in about two quarters. That actually happened. We're now outperforming the market, which I think is excellent. Also in France, if you look at the professionals business, it's doing well. It started at minus 2 in Q1, and Q4 was plus 12. So that also, it starts to really move. That's a very healthy business with a very nice profitability. In the meantime, we also invested quite a lot in the French organization. We opened 250 specialty units, which I think is huge. We moved quite a lot of business from the branches to in-house to be able to do that, to actually increase the mix we have towards a more specialized organization. As you know, the old Randstad was almost exclusively focused on that segment because it generated higher growth and higher profits. Obviously, in the mix between more specialties, more efficient and better serviced industrial segment, and the professionals, that's our strategy to get to a higher profit level than historically was the case in France. As of course François explained in his presentation at the Investors Days in Paris. We had one small drawback, obviously, the subsidy system. We already shared with you early that would happen. We still believe what we said in those days, that we will be able to get compensation for about half of the reduction of the margin decline that will be caused by this subsidy. It was a bit of a surprise, to be honest, that it was already in the books for December. So we did not have time enough to compensate. It was all too short term. We're now working on it. Obviously, through the year, the effect will diminish. Our expectation is it's going to be, as we said, in the range of or below 0.5% effect, which for the total group, of course, is an immaterial effect there. Permanent placements up 18%, it's clear. I talked about professionals, the transfer, and that, I think, concludes what I want to tell you about France, but you might have more questions. Germany professionals has been expensive at the beginning. Here, professionals went from plus 17 in Q1 to plus 41% in Q4. Main driver being IT. That business is really booming. Engineering is also picking up. The only area where it's still a bit tough is the aerospace, which has been for quite a while, as you know. We shared it with you now and again. Big growth again. Very healthy profitability. We kept on investing. Here we reached our capacity. That means the leverage disappeared. So if we want to grow, we need to invest in people. the productivity gains are very, very limited, which makes sense, of course, after like Q2 and Q3, where we had 40% growth, 40. It gets very difficult to keep on increasing your productivity. But with 5.5% EBITDA, we can live with that. That's, we've seen worse. We're very happy with the performance in Germany. They really did an excellent job. Idle time problem in the professionals improved a lot, and it's gonna improve more this year. And we also decided to invest more in marketing again. There's quite a lot of talk in Germany about the image of staffing, about equal pay. There's lots of newspapers writing about it, especially the unions make a lot of noise about staffing. IG Metall even launched a special campaign. Now, I don't know how long you guys follow Germany. I lived there for a couple of years in the early 1990s, and the first years I was always shocked by the press on the unions, because the things they ask for are usually outrageous, like 8% salary increases, but then funnily enough, they settle for 2.5%. So what I've learned is that two things happen. At the end of a crisis, when the economy starts to improve, we get more, if you want, war talk from unions. So far, in all cases, the result always has been a lot more favorable than the war talk would actually suggest. So we do not take this lightly. We take it very serious, of course. We put a lot of effort in lobbying and talking to everybody, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm less worried than you might think based on German newspapers. Staffing industry in Germany has taken care of one-third of the extra jobs that have been created last year. One-third. It's very difficult to defend that you would really jeopardize an industry that creates that many jobs, and that's only the direct jobs. We know from experience that if staffing is really under pressure, market finds other solutions. They very often are labeled outsourcing, and they very often mean that it is an unregulated, free market, very fragmented, where the unions have no influence at all and also no interest. Same goes for the Netherlands, by the way. If you read the newspapers, you get worried. If you talk to FNV, they said, "We don't mean you because you are well regulated, but all the other forms of flexibility that are not regulated." And if you kill staffing, you create exactly the opposite. But we are investing more in marketing for two reasons. First of all, because it's a business, it makes business sense, as we have proven and showed to you very often. And two, we have to work on the image there. A minimum wage, which we are in favor of course, is for sure a big help, especially given the fact that the borders in Germany will open to Eastern Germany later this year. That a minimum wage for sure is easy to defend. U.K. organic revenue growth +9%. In-house keeps on growing fantastically. We see a very scattered picture in the professional segment. Quite a big part of our business, as we shared with you, 30% or maybe even a bit more, is government related. Especially our most profitable operation, education, suffers from the budget cuts in the U.K., also Randstad Care. And on top of that, of course, this is a country with a world record of mergers. We started with something like 28 companies, and now we have the bulk of our business in five companies. And it has been an ongoing process. The reason the EBITDA is negative in Q4 is specifically that. It's again a bit more reorganization, et cetera, but we are sick and tired of calling them one-offs and exceptionals, but you should know. We do feel more a lot more optimistic about this year, given the fact that we've done a lot of these reorganizations, that we really reduced a lot of costs, especially in management. You can imagine, if you have a lot of small companies, you have a lot of important managing directors and a lot of important CFOs and a lot of them, et cetera. And if you have five companies, you have five of each. That has a big impact. But there's some cost attached to IT, back office combination, and of course, streamlining the organization. So that's happening. What is gonna happen with the public sector spending? I don't know. I'm a bit more optimistic than most people, also for Holland, by the way, because if I look at the recovery of the economy, I think the statistics are still not really giving the full benefit to what's happening, and that might mean that governments will have more money sooner than they anticipate today. But I may be completely wrong, and we didn't put it in the budget. North America, since I started to share these professional numbers with you, I'll do the same. Professionals in the US was growing at 0% in Q1, and it's now growing, and in Q4 it's over 20%. Obviously, the first indication of what's happening. You see the same happening in Canada and the other markets I just shared with you. Excellent performance. Staffing US has made has realized a major turnaround. It's in a very pleasant area today, making a nice profit, especially given the history, growing at an excellent rate, of course, already for a longer period of time. So we're very pleased there, and we see especially, of course, our jewel, which was used to call Sapphire IT, doing very, very well in North America. Finance has turned the corner, is contributing. So all in all, we're pleased with the performance in the US and North America, actually both Canada, through the year, improved. Permanent fees going up 34%, which is nice, although the basis which we compare to is still relatively low. Of course, for total growth, comparables get a lot more tough. That, by the way, is a good part on the 14% of January. And EBITDA 4.6%. Also in staffing in the US, we started to invest again by adding people because they had grown quite a lot. So we needed to add capacity to be able to handle the extra growth. We were a bit late in making that switch, which was during, let's say, the end of Q2, beginning of Q3, Greg, huh? And that cost us a little bit of growth, I think, but then the machine started to work, and it's going well. If you look at segments, the scientific explanation of the pluses is that a plus is 10%, two pluses 20, a minus is 10, and two minuses, well, 20 or more, huh? We see that many industries and segments are doing very, very well with high growth. By the way, this is science based on Randstad numbers. It's not market. In some markets we are big, in some markets we are small. So that's not always a true representation of the actual development in that complete country. We see financials in the Netherlands being slow somewhat. Public administration, health and social work. Obviously, UK is not on this list, but there you would see the same development there. All other segments are doing well, do very well, which is an encouraging sign. As you know, we are in 44 countries. This morning I made a mistake. I said that all countries are growing. I guess there are a few small ones in the Middle East that are not growing, but they are tiny, tiny, tiny. They're smaller than probably a medium-sized branch in the Netherlands, but still. All the other markets are growing, so that to me is a very encouraging sign. To illustrate again, because we always talk about unit steering and we change it in view of the professionals to field steering, because that covers a bit more. We think it makes sense. We just wanted to share with you, although I know you guys looked at it all the time, and you lady, of course. This is what happened. To be able to gain market share, to be able to be profitable, you have to move with the market. Again, 2009 was an exceptionally strong decline. In spite of that, if you look at what happens here to our FTE, number of FTE people we employ, the result of that on the gross profit per FTE, how we adjust, of course, the branches, but that's due to two things, the merger, but the biggest part is due to in-house branches, which we closed, or actually also in quite a number of cases, we more or less froze. So we closed them, but we kept all the stuff there. And by now, we've opened up quite a few of them again. This is how we manage through the cycle. So we feel that this tool is still extremely important. We've put more emphasis again on it because, as you know, we have a bigger population, more companies, and within those companies, less people that have the experience of field steering. So that's why we developed the professionals concept that we tested, that we now are using in rolling out in all of our professional operations. And we're going to be more aggressive and expanding in professionals business based on the proven success of this concept. And that a field steering, of course, plays a major role. Because here we have to change the culture a little bit, where in some professionals companies, consultants enter the company, they build up a book of business, then they had a very nice commission, and then they were happy. Well, As you know, we are happy about 5 minutes every quarter, and then we are unhappy again. So we have to make more people unhappy and make sure that we keep on executing the growth model, which is in here. So we put a lot more emphasis on it this year to push that more in all operations, which we, of course, already started to do quite a while ago. But this was the effect during the crisis. Now I'll hand over to Robert Jan on the financial results and the outlook. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it was quite a year. The first quarter with revenue development of around zero and a decision not to pay dividend towards the end of the year with organic growth in the fourth quarter of 17% and total growth even north of that and the completion of the acquisition of Fuji staff. So quite a special year. Things changed rapidly throughout the year. Just from a financial standpoint, revenues up, gross profit up, expenses up, but a little less, as a result of which the productivity improved, so leverage took place. The effective tax rate in the fourth quarter was impacted by a revaluation of the net operating losses in America due to the fact that the developments have been more positive than anticipated. And I'll mention it at the end. I've got a slide on the taxes, but it had an impact of 60 million euros in the fourth quarter. EPS to 64 cents. And moving average DSO improved by 3 days. That's quite a lot. That provides the company with funding of at least 100 to 150 million or equal to the acquisition of Fuji staff. This is the way we like funding our acquisitions. Of course, this is limited in terms of potential, but we've made good steps in this year. Free cash flow arriving at 203 million and net debt at 899. We didn't go through a lot of trouble to end up below the 900. This is the authentic number. Leverage ratio just below 1.5, resulting in a spread of 50 basis points now for the first quarter. The standby facility that we've organized in the summer of, I think it was 09, with Fortis Bank has been ended. We didn't want to pay the commitment fees anymore, and obviously the balance sheet is in pretty good shape, and as a result of that, we feel we don't need it anymore. The dividend was already mentioned by Ben. The P&L for the fourth quarter, the familiar numbers up here. Underlying, it says, but underlying equals EBITA because there's no deviations for this quarter, 161 million euros. And then we get to the amortization of the other intangibles. So this is the amortization of the brand names, the value of the client database, and the value of the Flexworker database. It increased compared to the fourth quarter of last year. We've explained that last time. That's because we have accelerated the amortization of the value allocated to brand names due to the fact that our integration is running faster than anticipated. So this is the reflection of success. Net finance costs relatively low, as described in the press release. It's a bit lower than one would expect, also due to the fact that this line also records the changes in the valuation of the minority interests. And that had some impact here as well. And as you can see here, positive number on tax, which is the balance of the regular tax, the effective tax rate, and on top of that, the impact of the revaluation of the U.S. tax assets. This is the full year overview, and I'm not going to say a lot more about it, but again, the amortization increased due to the same reason as I've just explained. The gross margin, just looking at a couple of lines. The gross margin impacted 0.3, the temp margin 0.3, due to business mix and some, let's say, resulting effects of the pricing pressure that we have seen over the previous quarters. More or less made up for by a reclassification item, which is the French tax, the business tax, moved from gross profit to the tax line, and some minor issues in between. So across the board, we can say that the commercial pressure on the temp margins has now stabilized, and we do see perm fees growing. They are now 7.6% of gross profits, but still significantly below historical peaks. The consolidated balance sheet, as always, not very exciting, but the intangible assets, mostly the goodwill on the Vedior transaction, as we are obliged to do, we have evaluated these valuations, and I made the point in the on the investor days, contrary to economic reality, the goodwill has to be allocated to the various countries, which is, you know, something one cannot avoid, as we so we have done this, and we have looking at the valuations relative to the goodwill numbers, no impairment necessary. And current asset mostly reflects our receivables, which are also stated here, 50 days. I just wanted to make the point that if you just look into that a bit more in detail, as you might know, we do provide any receivable older than 182 days. That's like the standard routine in the company, which might not be completely in line with reality, because it also includes receivables on governments, but it helps us to manage the receivables because everybody wants to avoid having an increase in OpEx as a result of increased provisions. The percentage of receivables older than 182 days is below 1%, which is a pretty good indicator of the quality of the receivables book in the company. Also, if you look at the cost that we incurred as a result of bad debts, typically this is around 10 basis points across the cycle. And in 2009, it was just a little north of it. In 2010, it's already south of it again. I think these are relevant indicators for the quality of the receivables portfolio. Consolidated cash flow for the final quarter of the year, 130 million from operations release. This is typical at the end of the year. The timing, you know, of payables and receivables has an impact here. 95 million release. Additions of some property, plant, and equipment, which is our sort of our CapEx, you could say, and software, 90 million, still below the level of our depreciation. And the free cash flow allowed us the financing of the acquisition. This line does include, so translation and other net debt, sorry, other on net debt, does include the net debt of Fujistava that was taken on board in the fourth quarter of last year. So across the whole year, again, excellent results in terms of revenue growth and the strong cash flow of 309 million, and only invested 94 million in working capital to fund the growth. This is the geographical performance. I'm sure you'll all have a look at it in the booklets and in the press release. This is quite a nice reflection of what we have seen over the last years, over the last months and years. And what we are showing here is that the development is very typical. If one could have drawn the development in advance, this is what one would have drawn. Expect in-house to grow, then to see, sorry, expect the U.S. in-house and staffing to grow, then to see the German industrially focused market to pick up as well, and then finally to see the U.S. professionals business to grow. And as you can see at the very end of it here, the growth rates are competing at this point in time. So this is the classical recovery pattern that one would expect. And it's also supported by the slide over here. This is where you see steep improvement in-house. Benny already referred to the enormous percentages. And if you look at this line, it's staffing coming in now, and professionally slow. It's a bit slow coming in as well. It's a pretty good development in the U.S. already, but across the board, the Netherlands and the U.K. lagging a little bit. But for example, France doing rather well. So typical to us, no surprise at all. Leverage ratio within the group, this is the net debt level. I mentioned it, just below 900 million at the end of the year. Leverage ratio now stands at 1.5. I already mentioned at the beginning that I had one slide on taxes. Just to go back to the 60 million again. At the end of the year, we again looked at the value of the net operating losses from the past. We also mentioned this as an advantage of the combination of Randstad and Vedior, because the earnings capacity of the two combined made it more likely that we would generate profits in the future that would compensate the losses from the past, and that's exactly what we expect to see happening, and it's happening as we speak already. And as a result of this improved outlook, we have to revalue the value of our deferred tax assets, so the value of the net operating losses in the U.S. We did have a substantial allowance, and that allowance has been reduced now. And I don't expect major changes here, you know, when the outlook improves or even when it deteriorates slightly. Only when the losses are really realized, we'll see some effect of that coming into the P&L, but that's not going to be very substantial. Well, the effective tax rate for 2011 is anticipated to be between 29% and 32%, and that same applies to the tax rate. And going forward, it might be a little higher. And then if you look at the lower part of the page, as you can see here, we've sort of outlined some drivers that will have an effect on the effective tax rate or on the cash tax rate or even on both. Well, it is obvious that if we grow our business, the impact of a certain kind of back basket with permanent differences will become relatively less, as a result of which the tax rate will go up somewhat. The growth of OpCos, especially when it's the countries with higher corporate income tax rates, that will have an impact on the group income tax rate as well. I mean, for example, the U.S. carries a higher corporate tax rate, and that will have an impact on the average applicable to the group. Of course, if we have changes in the corporate income tax rate, that will have either a positive or negative effect. Of course, we hope it will have a negative effect, but it might not be high on the agenda of most governments at this point in time. And then the repayment. You used to see 150 million here, but upon completion of the 2008 tax accounts, we have concluded that already 20 million has been sort of dealt with through the 2008 tax accounts, as a result of which 130 million is still outstanding and is anticipated to be dealt with in 2012. And for now, that is still the view, which was a very nice gesture of the Dutch tax authorities to help us out here. And then the payment regarding the recapture obligation. We have taken the losses in the U.S. and in Germany in the past into the Dutch tax accounts, but over time, when making profits, that has to be repaid. For that, we have formed an obligation, a liability in the balance sheet, and that will have some impact. And finally, timing differences can have an impact as well. The dividend policy, no change. It's the policy that stood. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to use it in the past 2 years, but it's back now. The aim is still the same. We're looking at a consistent dividend growth through the cycle, but a floor of €1.25. And we've tested that, as you know, in the past against certain downturn scenarios, but not against the severe scenario that we have experienced in 2009. And if earnings capacity and the financing policy allow for it, well, that's clearly the case with the leverage ratio. And as a result of that, we pay out between 30% but maximum 60% of our adjusted net profit. And as a result of that, we arrive at €1.18 per share. This again is sort of the storyline through the cycle. In the growth phase, we're looking for conversion ratios of 50% in order to get back to EBITDA of between 5% and 6%. Of course, the longer this lasts, then eventually this will not become possible anymore. But for now, we still see substantial upside opportunity in a variety of OpCos, as Ben explained it, through field steering, because that's what supports this. So just to conclude the outlook for the year, the trends have continued into January, and it arrived at 14% organic growth per working day in January. And then one should note that the months of January and also effectively February, like December, are more difficult to read than the more stable months. The impact in December of the Christmas time, the startup phase of the new year again in January. So we believe that the January indications are, least to say, a bit soft, a bit more difficult to read. But I'm going to give you the exit rates of the year and then the January growth rates. In the Netherlands, we're moving from 1 to 6%, in France from 20 to 16%, in Germany from 29 to 29%. It continues nicely, but again, difficult to read in the beginning of the year. Belgium 13 to 19%, the UK 13 to 5%. Might be some impact of permanent placement business and timing of closing of transactions here. Iberia 9 to 6, and North America 27 to 16, totaling 16% December and 14% in January. In-house and staffing continue to show robust growth, and the professional segment, as said before, is gradually strengthening. Again, the focus on field steering, the copy-pasting of specialties throughout the group, even the professionals' concepts are being copy-pasted in 2011, and that should help us to outperform the markets. We will continue to make investments in people, also in certain countries in marketing expenses and some outlets to support growth. And our OPEX in the first quarter are expected to be in line with Q4 2010. And please note that the inclusion of Fuji staff as from the 20th of October had an impact of 15 million. That equals, let's say, 80% of the quarter. So if you sort of upper that to a full quarter impact, you get very close to 20 million. So if you take the base of Q3, which was 545, add the 15 million of Fuji staff, you arrive at 560. Then add the full quarter impact, you get even a little north of that. At the same time, we have explained in the press release that we did have some restructuring costs that we have absorbed of a couple of millions in the UK, some costs in the Netherlands, the marketing costs in the UK. Marketing timing in the first quarter can also deviate a little bit, which results in the statement over here. So, finally, fully committed to realize further enhanced returns in 2011. We have some changes in the investor relations department. Bart Gianotte is moving on in the group. He is going to take full responsibility for another role, of which he has stepped in already a little bit. But officially, as per the 1st of March, he will be promoted. Pascal will continue. Unfortunately, he is ill today, but he'll continue in his role as investor relations officer. And Jan-Pieter van Winsen, who's sitting up here, if you raise your arm, will take over from Bart as from the 1st of March. And Jan-Pieter has been with us in at least two departments over the last couple of years. So an excellent preparation to step into the shoes, but it won't be easy, of Bart Gianotte. Okay, we're now moving to Q&A. Bart?
Roen?
Good morning. Good afternoon. Let me start with two questions. First of all, on the U.S. profitability... on the U.S. profitability, actually show very strong operational leverage over there. But can you give an indication on how the U.S. general staffing business is doing, i.e., is it only driven by the professionals business, or is the U.S. general business also showing some decent leverage? Then the other question I had is on the pricing environment in the Netherlands. Is there anything unusual going on versus previous cycles? Are there competitors more aggressive, or is it just a normal supply-demand behavior you're seeing, and you expect things to go back to normalized levels? And please allow me to have a third question, because the point you're making on these exceptionals in the Netherlands, I'm seeing some inconsistency in your reporting. In the UK, you do mention that you have sort of 4 million of exceptionals, which is mentioned in the press release. Why didn't you take the opportunity to also disclose it in the press release of the Dutch business instead of doing that at the presentation? Thanks.
Yeah, since Bart is here the last time, he will answer the last question. No, staffing has improved a lot. Profitability is... In Q4 is north of 3.5%, that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to repeat this, but anyhow, so they really made a big turnaround. So they for sure are also a contributor. Next to the increase in business, as I've shared with you, on the professionals in the US. Competition in the Netherlands was the other question, right? The Netherlands you referred to, Arun, eh? Yeah. Yeah, we will always have competition, I guess. Huh? But again, it is something we've seen through every cycle. That you first need a volume improvement before you see price improvements already. We still have some effect of some of the bigger contracts which were renegotiated. We also, for the first time again in a real big contract, managed to get price increases. So I think it's going to have the normal pattern. It's the normal battle uphill, which will take. We might still see some effects on margin from the bigger contracts of last year, but I think over time we'll see a recovery in the margin. And of course, for the average of the Netherlands, yacht being that much under pressure has a big influence, because in the past, as you know, they had margins of over 30% and a bigger part of the business. And we see that, of course, that as everywhere else, in-house is having the biggest growth. So that, of course, on the average margin has quite some effect.
Sequential decline in the gross margin, right? That's what you're telling me, actually. In the Netherlands, you're still seeing a sequential decline in the gross margin.
I know exactly what I told you, and that's what I want to tell you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. And then on the disclosure, Bart?
I mean, our disclosure on exceptionals is quite easy. We have not excluded any restructuring charges from the normalized result because we think it's a normal part of business. We just show it in a press release when it really explains the performance of a given country. And for the UK, it made a significant difference. Therefore, we gave it to you up front. For the Netherlands, it's just a very small effect on a country where the profitability is fantastic.
But since we got all the questions about it, we thought we'd disclose a bit more than in the press release. But if you don't want us to do that anymore, Arun, then we can do that.
Thanks, David and Jurabo. First question on your conversion ratio. Calculate a level of 43%. Your target is 50%. Is that more one-off related? How important is this target for you, and how easy is it to lift it again to above 50? And then maybe on the performance of Tempo Team, 6% growth in January. I would say at least 1% positive impact of Yacht. Randstad is getting close to the market, so Tempo Team seems to be flattish versus Q4. And 20% is public sector related. I would say, what's the other part of the explanation, and how fast can you improve the performance? Thanks.
Yeah, with regards to your first question on conversion ratio, David, this is a sort of a guiding principle in the company. This is something we think about all the time, but in the end, we have to make decisions. And for example, the mix has an impact here. We do have most of our companies showing very, very attractive conversion ratios. At the same time, we've also have some underperforming units, and we have decided, given the outlook, not to enforce them to make radical adjustments at this point in time, which would help us to get to the right conversion overall for the portfolio. But due to the outlook, it doesn't make sense, and let's say the payback term would be too short. But we are using it as very much as a guiding principle whenever we evaluate planning, when we look at the budget, when we look at the outlook for the quarter. And then we make our decisions. And in some cases, for example, we have decided to invest additionally in marketing.
Yeah, maybe a quick follow-up then. So it could be possible that, let's say, for the coming quarters, it will remain below the 50%.
Yeah, theoretically, that is possible. But again, it's a guiding principle. This is how we try to run our business. And one example is Germany. In Germany, is running at a level which is getting pretty close to full capacity. And there, we will not doubt any moment to add capacity. Whereas in other countries, we're still running below the right productivity levels. And that's just a fact. But we look at it opco by opco. And in most of the cases, it will arrive at the positive level also when you consolidate the data, but not always.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And then the second one, maybe?
Yeah, Tempo Team, we shared already what we thought were the issues. So I'm not going to try and agree to your calculation or not, David. You will understand that, obviously. What we said earlier is we missed part of the increase in the industrial market in early days of the recovery. It takes time to rebuild that. We have on purpose let go some contracts because we thought we could not make money on them. The government spend has its effect, as I said. That's a 4% effect on the total Tempo Team. There was one more. In the SME segment, I think we also missed some of the market. So what has happened in the meanwhile, of course, is that the distribution network, the units, have been redirected into the areas where we see the growth. So we expected the situation to improve through the year. So I'm not going to comment on a month comparison between the opcos, because that would require a lot of detail.
No, I know, but of course in the past you more or less promised that it would take 2-3 quarters to solve
of
issues.
It takes longer than I had expected to happen. The impact of the professionals business was bigger than we had anticipated. because we see so more or less the same pictures we saw in Yacht. So we adapted our, if you want, capacity and the number of professionals on the contract, and then the market deteriorated again, and then we adapted, and then we deteriorated again. So would we have known that the market would come down that much, we would have, of course, have got a lot earlier. And you see the same phenomenon here in this professionals business happening.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Hi, it's Tenteus, ABN. Two questions on your cost base. If I'm correct, you have had about 7 to 8 million of exceptionals in the fourth quarter relating to the UK, Iberia, the Netherlands, and acquisition-related costs. Can you confirm that your guidance then actually is an underlying cost increase for the first quarter? And second question, if I look at the cost increase compared to the third quarter, which would then be about 15 million if you adjust for the exceptionals, can you indicate how this 15 million is divided? So what is increased marketing versus the third quarter, and what is increased bonus payments versus the third quarter?
Tony, you're asking a bit too many details, but you know, stating reporting the cost level is sort of providing indications. It's never completely exactly, as you know. What happened in the fourth quarter was that we did learn that we would get to the high levels of our ranges set for bonuses, which is something you only know at the very end of the year. And as a result of that, we did have additional bonus accruals. In the new year, we're starting off with higher levels of targets, as a result of which we're not yet providing to the maximum level of bonuses. That also had an impact in the fourth quarter. So if you add it all up, then I think, you know, we're really talking about a flat level. And I mentioned already that marketing is always a matter of timing. We don't have the same marketing spend every quarter. And that will also be eased a little in the first quarter, whereas we'll see more of that again in the second quarter.
Can I have a slight question on your marketing then? Because luckily you already put your annual report on the website today. Yeah. And I see that your marketing spend increased by 15 million. How was the marketing spend skewed over the year? Is the majority of the marketing spend the 113 million in the second half of the year? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. And Q4 was definitely higher on marketing than Q3. That's
including the rebranding project, for example.
Okay, thank you.
We had quite a few rebrandings, should not forget that. We had in the UK quite a few. We had in Portugal and a few more countries, Germany. So that really had quite an impact on the marketing spend. Although we are in favor of by the way, a decent level of marketing spend.
Konrad Zomer, Berenberg Bank. The first question on your professionals business in the Netherlands and the UK. You mentioned in your statement that that's still worsening. And can you maybe be a bit more specific there? Because I do think that you're a little bit cagey about explaining why you're still lagging the market in the Netherlands. And this could be a bigger reason than what is clear from the press release. Because also in the UK, if you do take out the restructuring charges that you explained, then even excluding those costs, I think the results are a little bit disappointing in the UK. And the second question is on the difference in the tax number or the amount you have to pay back to the government from the 150 and the 131. Just to be clear, is that a number that is also okayed by the government? Or is that just a number that you think is the right number now?
The second one is the easy one. Yes, it has been okayed, and that's the number now.
Okay.
Well, the first one is not so difficult either. I shared with you the exit rates of Yacht in the Netherlands. Yeah? So that means not correct for working days, by the way, but we were close to zero in December, so that is an improvement. Correct for working days, by the way, December is a difficult month because a full day is not a full day, etc. But still, there's still some decline. And what we shared about the UK is exactly what happened. So we see a mixed landscape, whereas everything that is government-related, like education, and that, again, used to be a big, and still is, by the way, but less profit contributor, care, but also building, construction, although it is improving somewhat, are still suffering. Finance is improving, gross margins, as you will have read. So I think we painted the picture. So what part are you missing there then, except for the exact P&Ls, obviously?